Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show with today's guest, Sean Kelly, president of Kelco Carpentry. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is the podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. In this episode, we discuss Sean's apprenticeship in Ireland, his move to the United States, and the founding of Kelco. Then we went in depth on running a business for profit versus your own happiness. This episode was a gem. Today's show is brought to you by Central, commercial carpenters, in support of our conversations. Enjoy the show. Hey, Sean, welcome to Mass Construction Show.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, the, you know, genesis of this discussion is I listened to you on another podcast and two things. You started talking about what your apprenticeship like was back in Ireland.
Yep.
And it was very interesting to me. So I'm like, oh, so I want to talk about that. I think I want my audience to hear what that was because I think there's some value over here in the States, how we might be able to kind of use some of that approach. And then the other thing was I was completely frustrated by the people that were not asking the questions I wanted them to ask. They would probably ask some fine questions for them.
I feel like there's always podcasts like that. Why didn't you ask this? Why didn't you ask that? So yeah, I get it.
Yep, and as someone that does this, I am sympathetic to them.
Right.
But as someone who
you want more details?
Yeah, and I was just like, how are they not asking him about this? You know, so I am stealing their thought to have you on, and we're gonna do it my way.
Yep, 100%. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. So I think the great place to start is, you know, can you tell folks what was your apprenticeship back in Ireland?
Yeah. So. Well, I grew up in a, you know, a family of tradesmen. My dad was a carpenter. My uncle was a carpenter. He had his own cabinet shop. My uncle Paul actually was a carpenter as well. So my three uncles were all in the trade. Mm-hmm.
More interesting to me though, was it your grandfather was a butcher?
Oh yeah. Yeah, my grandfather's a butcher. My uncle actually carries the nickname, the Butcher Kelly. So he does. So he had his own butcher shop.
I love it. Is it gone or does he still have it?
No, it's gone. Okay. So it's funny, my Uncle Mark carries the butcher nickname, yeah. But my Uncle Paul was really the butcher after the fact, yeah. You know. But as far as apprenticeship, yeah, so my uncles were all in the trades. I worked with my dad probably weekends, you know, as a kid, stuff like that. I would help my uncle, you know, mm-hmm. You need a few quid to go buy yourself some sweets, candy, which you know I still love.
Yes, to this day, very much so.
Yeah, a little much. But... yeah, it basically started when I was like 10, 12. You know, you'd be on a job site. I spent a lot of time with my grandmother's. So, you know, your help was always needed. Mm-hmm. Well, my Uncle Mark was always like, if you're staying here, you're going to help me.
Yep.
You know, so he had a workshop down the street. So I'd be in there helping him, you know, cut, rip sheets. He had his own cabinet shop. Basically, I kind of always felt that it was going to be in a trade. My older brother Patrick's a plumber. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, books weren't my strong point. Wasn't overly interested. You know, it was more like...
me neither.
Yeah. Yep. Sports and, you know, what are you going to do later on in life? I didn't really feel like books were a good fit for me. Mm. Plus, I don't think my old man would have let me stay on the school if I wanted to. Yeah. So, what's funny is I think I actually wanted to be a bricklayer because... mason, because you know, they make more money back home, or so you think, but you know,
is it because there's more masonry construction,
a lot more masonry,
yeah,
so like
there is here, yeah.
Yeah, so my whole apprenticeship, it was nothing but block houses, so there's no timber frames. Come in later on, but they're still not that big in Ireland.
And is it a block with stucco kind
exactly, there's plaster on the outside. There's different styles of course, but it's mainly all block. So yeah, but my man says, no, you're going to be a carpenter. So 16, I left high school. I think we had to spend 2 days in the training center in Uri. That's a bigger city in Down. It's about 30 minutes away. So we had to spend 2 days there, I believe, the first year. So, you know, you go over different things. I mean, the first day, I believe, like we'd throw a bit of wood in the vise and we'd use like a plane, you know, just starting from scratch, you know. That went up to eventually, you know, cutting roofs, stuff like that. There are other aspects I can't exactly remember what.
Yeah.
But you're saying the benefit, you know, to that, to what we have here. You know, a lot of people back home would say, oh, you're wasting your time in the training center, you know, you're not going to learn this and that, you're better off on the field. But I believe, like, whenever somebody hires you as an apprentice back home, they get an incentive.
Okay.
So, like, my old boss, so my dad worked for this company, I also worked for that company as an apprentice. You can do 3 years or 2 years. I was going to, like, stop after the second year. I was like, I don't need to go to third year. But my boss at the time was like, you should go back to third year because there's incentives in this. I don't exactly know what they were.
Yeah.
I believe.
No, it makes sense. He could probably pay you more if he's getting an incentive from it, right?
Yeah. Right. There was something involved there. It's great training and all, you know, and I feel like with that incentive, and again, I got to serve my apprenticeship with my father, you know, that, I mean, there's nothing really better than that. You know, he's going to take the time. He wants you to be doing well. He wants you to do things right.
And when you say this 2 days, was it 2 days a month?
Two days a week.
And you would go and you would various aspects of construction, right?
So, like, we could be in the workshop one day. We could be in the classroom the next day.
So you did roof framing. You did some furniture making.
Yeah.
Did you framing?
I believe we did.
Beyond
all I can remember was just cutting a roof. I know, like, I was there for like 3 years.
3 years.
You know, but I can't remember. I can't even remember.
I think you remembered better for the last podcast, guys, because I remember.
Right, because, well, you know, the third day, like, a lot of the class don't go the third year, you know, so it's like first and second. So the third year, a lot of boys drop out, so I can't for the life of me even remember the third year. We went one day a week.
Okay.
But I can't remember much from it, to be honest. Stuff, and I'd be going with him, you know, helping bring in tools and all that there.
What does that mean?
Homer's like a little side job of your own.
Okay, yeah.
You work for somebody and then your little jobs on the side.
Yep.
So they're called homers. But he have the little miter box. You'd be cutting like
45 or whatever. Yeah.
I forget the name of the saw. There's a special name for this thing. I can't remember for the life of me. But anyways, he'd use that there, you know, for adjusting meters. He'd use a block plane, stuff like that. They're all hand-nailed, you know. Yep. No such thing as nail guns or anything like that. I still remember he had this, like, black toolbox that he himself, you know, coming up through the years had, and he always kept. But he had all sorts of, like, nice hand tools in there and stuff, like, you know.
You should get your hands on that before it's
gone. I'd love to know where it is, actually. Yeah, now that I think of it, yeah.
Yeah.
But even us, whenever I was starting my apprenticeship, you know, a handsaw was a vital tool. Like, there was no skill saws or anything like that. Well, there was, but I don't know why we just didn't. Like, nobody wanted to bring in their own tools. My boss at the time wouldn't have been, you know, too frivolous, you know, with, like, buying tools and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
So you're just taking a handsaw, are you framing roofs with handsaws? Handsaw,
yeah. Cutting the whole roof with a handsaw.
Yeah.
Cutting sheets of plywood with a handsaw. I mean, like, snapping a line. And, like, ripping the whole sheet with a handsaw.
That was been exhausting.
There was nothing quite like buying a brand new handsaw, you know, because, like,
you'd use
the other one right to the death. But whenever you got a new one, it was, like, so valued and it was so enjoyable to use.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I come over here now and I don't even think of buying a handsaw, you know, because you've got that many cordless tools. But
I can't tell you the last time I saw a handsaw.
I know. It's like,
the one you cut pipe with, like a hacksaw.
Right.
You still see a hacksaw every now and again for someone to cut something off.
Yeah.
But a legit wood saw, like, I remember my dad had one when I was a kid, but, like,
a lot of people probably wouldn't know how to use them. I'll be totally honest with you. You know, there's a method to it. Like, you know, you push too hard and the blade's bending and all this here. You know, it's something you learn.
Yeah, you gotta get
you
a
have
feel.
To learn pretty quick when you're serving your apprenticeship. I posted a video on Instagram the other day of me coping about a picture mold. Coping's something I really enjoy. You know, a lot of guys would use a jigsaw, they'd use a table saw. I use a table saw sometimes as well. Jigsaw, I would never use a jigsaw to cope. But, you know, I've served my whole apprenticeship with that. I continue to do it and fancy myself pretty good at it. I enjoy it. You know, it's stuff like that. You know, sometimes when I'm scribing baseboard, I'll just take the block plane out. If it's not so bad, I'll just shave it down, scribe it tight to the floor using the block plane.
Like that,
you know, stuff like that.
So planers, handsaws, coping saws, no nail guns,
no hand nailed everything,
roofs,
everything. You know, it was like kind of odd because a buddy of mine would ask me to help him back in the day, and he'd have these Pazlo nail guns, and I'm like, geez, that thing's class. but we wouldn't have any, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience, you know. But even back then, you know, my heart wasn't totally into it. I mean, you just leave school, you're just looking, you know, enough money to get by.
Yeah, it was a job more than a...
It was more like of a job, more so than a passion, yeah. Mm.
Do you remember anything that kind of, was there a moment in time, or was it just gradual that it started to be that you ended up really liking it?
Just gradual, you know. I still to this day remember my last day on the construction site at home, because my... I think it was my last day. But my boss, it was 2008, the recession just hit Ireland, and he came up to me, I think it was like a Tuesday or something, I can't 100% mind. But he had said, I have to give you your 2 weeks' notice, you know, I have no more work for you. So, got my 2 weeks' notice, and, you know, I can bring the story on, but that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, no, tell me, did you attempt to find other work there, or were you already thinking about potentially moving, or...
I was always thinking about it. I played Gaelic football back in Ireland. I was decent enough at it. My cousins, I had noticed, you know, on Facebook that they were over here playing football for the summer stuff, and it looked really interesting to me. And
were they playing Canton?
Playing Canton.
Yeah.
So that looked really interesting to me. So I got on Facebook that night and I was like, hey, would you be interested in having me out to play football? And they said yes. So I think it was like on a flight like 2 days later.
Wow.
Yeah. So you
did your 2 weeks and then you were gone?
Yeah. Wow. No. Two days.
You didn't even do the
2 days.
You didn't even give him the 2 weeks.
Didn't even give him the 2 weeks. Yeah. I think he was probably happy because he had that work for somebody else. Yeah. You know, needed it more so than me.
Mm. And at that point, what were you doing? Were you doing finished carpentry or were you doing everything?
Doing everything. Mm. So we would take a house from the ground up, you know, obviously not the block, but, you know, we'd cut the roof on first, tile the roof, move inside. We'd even hang the plasterboard, as you call it back home, sheetrock blue board here. We had hang it ourselves. We had insulate the roof space ourselves.
Okay, so you got a mason that lays the block, just for people that this is different construction, right? So you've got someone pours what, slab on grade?
Yep.
Slab on grade. Mason lays the block.
Yep.
Who parges the exterior for the plaster?
Plasters do all that.
Exterior, the stucco.
Yeah, plasters do everything outside. So at home, you do like a plain, like kind of plaster stucco, or else you can like pebble dash it. I'm not too sure if you heard pebble dash.
Yeah, it's I can gather it. Actually, like a skip trowel or a...
Yeah,
like,
it's actually really, you know, cool to watch, where they just like take a shovel full of these like little stones and like smash it into the soft plaster of the house. It's called a pebble dash.
Yeah, it like texturizes it.
Yeah, texturizes it. Hmm. So they'd do that. We'd do the exterior fascia and all that stuff, soffits. So we'd do the roof. We'd tile the roof. We'd do the fascia and soffits outside. A window company would come in and install all the windows and doors, all PVC. You know, I'd notice now that they're come very big over here. Just even the function of them is like more so European style that we've had over there for years. You know, even when I was serving my apprenticeship, we had that. Hmm. Inside, you know... if there was like a roof space or anything, we'd frame the walls.
So now why a window company and why not you guys? Just
It's kind of an efficiency thing. I mean, they're supplying the windows, you know, and it just makes sense.
And then who does the blocking around the masonry opening?
There isn't any. Like as far as wood, you mean?
Yeah.
There isn't any. They shoot directly into the block.
Really?
Yeah. Whenever we're like... So we'd do the sills. So there's like a concrete sill goes in, precast. But we'd put like...
you can go for it.
We'd have to like pour a little bit of concrete in the sill on the inside and put like little blocks of wood so we can fix our windowsill too.
Okay.
If you get me.
Yeah,
so
I do.
So we'd
pour
cement in there and like put in
like
little...
Kind of like mud set it into...
Yeah, exactly. But we'd do the insulation... You know, hang the plasterboard, and then we'd hang the frames. Cause we hang the frames at home before plaster, so they can plaster to the frame.
Okay.
It's actually a nicer system, you know.
And then trim over the top. Are you saying the trim goes in, and then they plaster right up to the trim?
So we put the door frame in.
Yep.
They plaster to the door frame, so everything's nice and flush. Yep. And then we put the trim on after plaster.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
And then... What do they do on the inside of the block? Is it just like a small furred out wall, or is it like...
Yeah, so they'll plaster everything on the inside and the outside.
So yeah, but forgive me. When you said you're putting the plaster board on first, right?
Yes.
You're putting the blue board.
So
what are you fixing that blue board to?
So it's only really the ceilings.
Okay.
It's only the ceilings. Okay. If we're doing like a roof space, you know, anything like that, we'll do timber frame up there. So we'll frame all the walls ourselves, you know.
Okay.
But the block plaster straight to it. There's usually a cavity. So there's like two layers of block with a cavity in the middle. It'll usually fill that with some sort of insulation.
Oh, that's because I was trying to figure out where the insulation
yeah.
gets it.
Okay. Yeah, so that's usually where they've put it inside the wall. So there's a...
They don't do a full 8-inch block, do they then?
No.
Okay.
I believe the blocks might be about 5 inches wide.
Okay.
But you've got two layers of them.
Yeah, so you've got 4 or 5 inch block, airspace.
Yeah.
Four or five inch block. Well, the insulation in the airspace.
Yeah.
And that air gives you insulation anyway too, right?
Yeah.
And then they're direct applying the plaster direct to the block.
Direct applying the plaster, yeah.
You're framing all the interior walls, setting the frames.
Not interior walls, only interior walls on like the second floor.
Okay.
Well, sorry, in some cases, the second floor, I should say. Some houses, I'm just thinking of one job. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we'd have to frame walls, but a lot of the times we wouldn't because like everything's block.
Okay. Doing block interior walls too, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing. There was one job around, there was basin slabs, so they just build right on top. But usually, you know, whenever we put the joists in, you know, on a second floor, we decide, okay, we're just going to do everything out of wood on the second floor, but the first floor is typically all block.
So first floor block interior walls, then you wood frame the floor?
Yes, so there's wooden joists and all go in. Yep. So then the second floor, we'd like put down...
plywood.
Sheath it, and then, you know, build our walls on top of that.
Okay. And then, but you'd set all the door frames in the block wall on the first floor as well. Yep.
Yep.
So you set all those frames. You, if it's a two-story house, you're framing, you're laying the joists in subfloor and then framing the interior walls. And then obviously all the rafters. And then you're calling them tiles. What's the roofing typically?
So it's usually a tile. We use slates back there as well. It's either tiles or slates.
Okay. Yeah. What's the tile like? What's it made out of?
I don't really know. Stupid as that sounds.
Yeah, no, I guess. No, you were young.
Forget the material it's made out of.
I'm trying to envision it because I don't like you see thatch roofs and postcards.
Well, picture Italy with those orange tiled roofs.
Yeah, okay.
We're just not that flamboyant, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
So like a, something that's...
Yeah, some of them have like a curvature to them. Yep. Some of them, the slates tend to be flat. Yep. The tiles would interlock, you know. Mm-hmm. They've got like a lip that sits on a lath. So we put our rafters on and then we go horizontally across the rafters with a lath. So our tiles can like hook onto and then we nail them as we go.
Interesting.
So they've got a lip and they rest on the lath, but we also nail them. Hmm.
I like, so it's, you end up having basically strips the whole way down the roof.
Exactly.
And you're just
if you can imagine like strapping inside the house for the blue board.
Yep.
We've got strapping on the outside for the tiles.
Interesting.
And the slates. There's nothing solid. You know, there's like a layer of felt. There's a layer of felt.
Like felt paper.
Yeah. And then, lath and felt the roof.
Yep.
It's like, it's almost, how many years now? So I'll be back there.
Yeah.
So
you roll the felt paper and then you put the lath over the top of it.
And then we put the lath over the top of it. Yep.
And then that allows you to sit the tiles on there and just like pin them at the top?
Yeah. Like so hand nail the tiles at the top.
And then like the bottom holes. Sits on the
bottom
the lip.
Sits on the other layer of tile going up, you know?
Okay. I like it. So you guys were doing everything. When did you start gravitating? Was it just while you're at work? You're like, hey, I like trimming the place out more. I like, was there any, did you enjoy the furniture making stuff at all? Like how did you end up?
So I'll be totally honest. I mean, I think everyone kind of gravitates towards finish because it's nicer. You're inside, you know.
See, it's funny. I wouldn't.
Right.
I'm not detail oriented.
Right. But
so that would give me like an ice cream headache if I had to fucking worry about like the tiniest details.
Well, I think some people don't realize that they don't have that eye for detail and they want to do it anyways, you know, because you know, we're in New England here, especially here, we're in New England, the winters here are pretty harsh. Well, they have been.
Yeah.
they want to be inside. I don't blame them. You know, I wouldn't want to be in a roof, anything like that during the summer either. So mm-hmm. it's either, you know, the heat in the summer or the cold mm-hmm. in the winter. But for me, whenever I first got here, I was doing a little bit of metal framing. Hated that. I just knew that I wanted to be doing finish. So I was moved into like the finish aspect of things.
Who was the first person you were working with?
So it was another ice lad, Molly Barber.
Okay. What did he do for?
He was just commercial? A contractor. No, this was actually in Longwood Towers.
Okay.
Yep. You know where they are?
Yes.
Yeah. So like there was quite a few apartments in there. So yeah. he had that whole building or whatever it was. Mm. So he was doing all that, but he'd have a framing crew and he'd have a finish crew. So I was moved into the finish crew, and just the tools and stuff, and just the way it was timber framed. Because back home, whenever you're putting on baseboard into a block wall, you have to use a certain kind of nail, like an oboe, it's called. It's like a concrete nail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's it's not the most fun thing to try and drive, and on certain occasions, you know,
Did you have a double head like a concrete nail?
No, well, it's got like a special kind of oval head.
It's just to reinforce it. So you don't bend it, yeah.
But certain times you'd be beating on, you know, a nail into a bit of baseboard, and mm-hmm. the nail would just stop, and you'd be smashing it, and it's not going anywhere. But over here, it's like, oh, you have to find your wooden studs, and then you're using like nail guns and all the nice tools. I'm like, wow, I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, so for people that don't know the work you're doing, I would say go to Instagram and look up Kelco Carpentry. But, you know, you're doing some pretty nice stuff, right? I mean, you're not the, because I guess there's people that might gravitate towards finish work and they're slapping speed base on.
Right.
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 Like when I did the first house we bought and renovated, like it was appropriate for the look of the house. It had wide pine plank floors, but I mean, I was just putting 1x4, cutting 45s on the end and nailing it on the wall. And then that was it. That was the extent of it. So I guess like, I think when people hear finished carpentry, that depends, right? Like you're doing pretty nice, like built-ins and unique stairs. Like when did you start gravitating towards like, I would say the type of finished carpentry you do straddles between furniture building and finished carpentry, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I take a bit of pride in my work. I know which way things should be done. You'd be surprised at how many people don't, that you see. But I don't know. So I worked for an English guy for about three and a half years. And we used to do a lot of work in the South End, red bricks. So we'd like the whole place would be gutted, we'd reframe it, and we'd do the finish in it, which was really nice, you know, because not in structural, it's, well, you know, new floors and stuff. But that was super nice. But I always really enjoyed the finish of it.
Mm.
So I left there anyways, joined the union for a year, because I kind of wanted to get my feet wet a bit more with the framing, because, you know, I hadn't really learned an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, was in 723. But it was mainly
which is, for people listening, that's the residential local.
Yeah. So it was prefab. Sorry, prefab. Okay. Prefab walls. You know, it's not really too, you know, hard about that. You know, you're just laying walls.
Yep.
But stayed there for a year. Went to work for another English guy. Who specialised in finish. I knew it was good at finish. That's kind of where. So after a year in the framing unit, I was like, yeah, you know what? This is not for me. Yeah. So worked with him. All he'd done was finish as well. He kind of got a bit slow. So actually me and a buddy started our own company. So we were doing pretty much anything. You know, we'd take on anything. A bit of finish, we'd do a deck. You know, we'd do whatever it took to stay busy.
Yeah.
He kind of broke away. I went my own way. And again, you know, whatever kind of work came along, a buddy of mine was a foreman for Haycon.
Yeah.
So he was definitely one of the key men behind me, you know, getting, you know, in the finish, you know, full time.
Yeah. And was it, forgive me if I'm interrupting your story, but like, and maybe this is where you're going with it, but what was it that finally got you to settle and say, it's Finnish carpentry that I want to do? Was it opportunity? Was it just that's what you enjoyed?
Yeah.
Could it be something like there's a need? There's a like what was?
I just kind of so.
Did you say you love it?
Well.
And it's okay to say no, because I don't love code consulting. Right? Well, you know, like, I do it, and I like construction, but I don't, yeah. You know, like...
You know, you see some guys on, you know, Instagram, and their whole heart is, like, devoted to carpentry. What can mm-hmm. I do better? What can I do here? Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. I wouldn't say I'm that much in love with it like they are. Mm-hmm. There's guys out there, you know, want to prove a point here and there. Mm. Not so much. I just know what I got to do. I'm pretty good at it. There's certain aspects that I love, certain aspects that, you know, with any business you don't love. Hmm. But as far as settling on finished carpentry, I just always wanted to do it. I knew I was good at it.
Yeah.
So I guess I just, one job led to another, you know, kind of like that. Hmm. And that's just kind of how I mean, that's the route I always wanted to go. Hmm. But you just don't know, you know, yes. It's just worked out well.
Yeah, there's like lots of like very, you know, successful folks, and a lot of them say like this find your passion stuff is, they're like, you don't really become passionate about something instantly. It's like you start right. doing it and then you become passionate about it, right? So I wonder how much it was it like as you were getting into it, or is it that it's human nature? Did you like to be good at something and you were good at it? So like, oh, I'm going to do this because I like being good at something, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, your confidence just grows and grows. And you're just, like I said, I like to think of a good head about me as far as finish goes. Mm. And it just went on and on and on. Mm. Not giving up, you know. It's like, you know, some guys just do enough to get by and, you know, they're kind of kidding themselves and then it doesn't work out and you don't do work any more work for that guy, then this guy is using somebody else now. Mm. So, you know, there's a bit of loyalty there, you know, as far as, like, you know, builders that you do work for. They're the ones that kind of keep you on track, but then you get to a point where you don't really need builders. You can find your own work, but building your name, reputation, you kind of need those jobs, you know, and I was kind of lucky in that. You know, aspect of things. You know, I got the nice work. I could showcase it. People could see what I could do.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, it's all of it, right? Like I say, I don't love code consulting, but, like, I enjoy construction. I like the people that I work with. Like you're saying, you know, do you have relationships with builders that you like working with them?
Of course,
and you like to try and be good at something and be successful. And, like, it's all of that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's all that, you know. I gotta admit, like, schedule's very, very difficult for me. I'm tend, like, somebody picked up the phone right now and called me and says, hey Sean, can you help me on this job? I'll probably say yes when I should really be saying no. And I kind of get myself into trouble that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of like, you want to run a business, you want to have a good crew. If you find the right lads, you want to try and keep them busy. You know, so my head can't exactly be in the game the whole time as far as being on the tools. Mm-hmm. Which can kind of push things a little overboard because people want me on the job, I can't be on the job, and I can't have my guys do the job because I don't really trust them just yet to do it. Mm-hmm. So it'd have to be on me. But a good friend of mine is saying, you know, well, you kind of have to pick and choose. You know, you either want to run a business or you want to be on the tools. So you either get smaller or you get bigger. Yep. You have to pick. You can't do both.
Yeah. What are you thinking?
At the minute, I'm not too sure. I'm really not. It's kind of like I've had this discussion with other people too. Is like, I don't really know if my communication skills are that good, because you tell people to do something a certain way and you just don't know if they understand what you're saying, or maybe it's the accent. But, you know, certain things like that there. But I felt like if I took a step back, took the nail bag off a bit more and just stayed with them, showed them, you know, this and that, made sure they do it right, then I can leave. You know, it's just not a job of throwing your guys on site, do this, do that, come back. Job's not where it should be. People are okay with that, but I'm not. You know, it's like there's so many guys that I've seen over the years that, like, really shouldn't be doing what they're doing, but guys just...
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, you know, we were talking before we started and we were discussing kind of like the lean principles and like the pre-planning and like spending the time to set up a template or a jig or whatever. And, you know, you say to yourself, and I say to myself, that, oh, I don't have the 2 hours to spend to set that up.
Right.
Which is just stupid, because in the long run, you're going to make those 2 hours up, you know, 100 times
100%
over. You know, do you think that maybe it's, you know, stepping back and saying, okay, I'm just going to spend the hours here and say, not do it myself, but yep, like walk through with your guys. Hey, this is how we approach this. So this is how you do this. Or, you know, here's what you want to do when you face this. And like, there's three ways to describe this. You could do this, you could do this, or do that, right? Like, I like this. You can pick what you want. You know, you don't have to do it like me.
Yep.
But and invest that time. But it means that your time then isn't somewhere else that you probably want it to be at that moment.
Right.
But is that investment
right? Well, worth you know, it? There's the investment, and then I'm sure as a lot of guys in the industry will know, you teach them everything and then they're gone. They're away working for themselves.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's like the simple things, you know, we could be building a bench seat and I'm trying to like draw it the way I want it built. Or maybe I don't have time to draw it the way I'm built, way I want it built, and you let them do it and you come back and you're like, well, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. You know? So, you know, there's time wasted there. That's what I mean. If I could like step back a little bit, slow down, tell them exactly which way I want something done, and for them to do it that way. Of course, they need the right tools, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's probably more than that going on, not just me, whereas guys are like, just go and do that without taking the time. I feel like that's where, you know, we're in trouble here as far as like, you know, craftsmanship is coming.
Mm.
It's kind of in decline, as I can see.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, it's a great point. How do you get past that? You do all the training, and then the person leaves. And you know, have you ever heard that saying? They're like, I could spend the time and money and train them, and they might leave.
Right.
Or I could not train them, and they'll stay. Right.
You know, it's a battle. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm a small business. Like, you know, there's always probably somebody that's going to be a law for more, or maybe not, but. You know, you've always got that battle, you know, you want to keep lads happy, but there's only so much you can do that makes financial sense,
yeah.
You know, or else they're gone, or else you just try and treat them. I don't put any pressure on my guys, you know, I say, take your time, try and do it the best you can, you know,
yeah.
As far as like a lot of things, I'm not going to throw them in the deep end and ask them to do something ridiculous that I wouldn't yeah. trust them to do my, you know, that I wouldn't do myself, mm-hmm. or at least I'd have to be there, but... You know, I'd like to think I've got a good working environment going on. The guys are happy. I don't pest them. I don't annoy them. I just expect... they know what I expect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. Just you know, they can go to work, relax, and just get it done the right way.
Hmm. Yeah, because, you know, it's funny. Like, this dialogue that you're having, or the thought process that you're having, is it's transferable to everybody, right?
Right.
And you have to figure this out. Like, I've done a few episodes... that I'd kind of call carving your own path.
Right.
And it's just people that, you know, have not taken like the typical path within construction, whatever that might be, you know, start off as a APM and then become a project manager and then a senior project manager, or start out in the field as an assistant super and senior super and
right.
operations, whatever. But I find the people that spend the time to like, oh, you know what? I kind of really... like this, let me move over here,
right?
Even though they're moving what might appear to be to the outside person to appear that they're moving off course,
right?
They're really like moving towards happiness rather than just up a ladder,
right?
So I'd be curious what you think, or what you finally settle on, because like do you want to be a business owner, or do you want to be a finished carpenter? Because I almost wonder, like, I think of when I look at your work, and now I know this will feel uncomfortable and you'll be like, oh, I wouldn't go that far. But like your stuff to some degree borders on art, right? Where like,
well, I mean, it's nice to hear that there, like, but to me, it's just the way it should be, you know, but I mean, I do get to work on some nice projects, yes. So there's nice detail involved. They're the ones that I want to be involved with.
Yeah. And I think, like, the problem with the artist is they're never a good business person.
Yeah.
right? And well, what? It's rare that they are.
Right.
Right? Because what are you focusing on? Are you focused on building a business or are you focused on...
See, that's it. You know, I've never had any business experience. I've just been a carpenter my whole adult life.
Yeah, me neither.
So it's like, well, what's business? You know, you just know, go put the nail bag on every day and go to work, you know, but obviously I've got guys working for me now. You got to keep them busy. You got to make sure jobs are on track. Got to make sure stuff being done right. Got to go price work to keep the guys busy. You know, it's...
Yeah. But what's funny though is like, so, and where I would say you have some creativity. I look at your Instagram. What's it? You're up to like 17,000 followers?
About 17,000.
Yeah. And that takes creativity. That's not an easy thing, right? And that's great for business. That's like that's a marketing skill.
Right.
Right.
But I don't really, I don't go overboard on the Instagram. You know, you see guys recording videos there of the most silliest of things, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. I take some offense to that, but okay.
Well, some people like it based on their followers. I mean, they have a crazy amount of followers, but I don't take followers as actual talent.
If you know what
I mean. Yeah. So I know some of the best in the game that, you know, probably have like 1,000 or more.
Yeah.
So followers isn't really it, but I know what you're saying. I know what you mean.
Yeah, like I don't like...
But I try, you know, I try to like show the cool sides of like carpentry, you know. If I feel like something's worth showing, I'll show it, but I'm not going to do it just to create a reel, you know, something like that. Yeah,
it's to share it. Because like the way I look at it is like a lot of the things I try to share, like you only see the Instagram stuff, but like especially on LinkedIn, like I'm trying to show things that like people can learn from.
Right.
Yes, I like to have fun too when I shit post and shit talk and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the goal is like, hey, can someone learn from this? Or frankly, it's just like, I think this is really cool. Like
that's kind of more my thinking. It's not so much about teaching people. You know, people go, oh, I seen this here. It was really informative. I like the way you done that. I'm like, well, I didn't really intentionally mean for it to be that way. But if you learn something from it, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as like running the business side, I was thinking about creating like a set of videos of how I would do baseboard scribed stuff, I guess, just so I can like send it on to them and say, watch this video. This is how I want it done. So it's like making that template that we talked about.
That's a good idea.
And you're just, that's it. You know, because I mean, there's a lot of common aspects of carpentry, you know. You know, like door casing, baseboard, maybe even door hardware, you know, making a template for like, you know, a mortised pocket door lock, something like that there.
Yeah.
Just make one video while you're doing it. I mean, it's going to save a lot of explanation down the line. I know it's easier said than done. Might not happen, but it's something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, no, you should. And then it's just like a catalog of videos. Or I bet you can even find, just spend the time to go find them.
Right.
They're probably out there.
Yeah, they probably are.
You know.
Yeah.
Even like a lot of the stuff that used to be on even like PBS.
Right.
Right? Like where they're, I forget the guy that would do the, was it Norm? Who would do the actual like furniture building and stuff?
Well, I don't know if I was around. I don't know if I was seeing those shows on PBS. How long ago were we talking?
I was young. So it was a while ago, but there used to be.
I've heard of Norm before.
Yeah. It's not this old house. It was a different show where they would basically make furniture and they show you how to do, you know, a mortise and tendon joint or a dovetail joint or, and like, I'm not even into that, but I would just sit down. I'd be fascinated. I would just like watch it. I'd be like, oh, that's cool.
See, I know buddies of mine be watching. Oh, you follow this guy on YouTube. I goes, carpentry is the last thing I'm looking up on YouTube. I don't want to see anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I like to give myself a bit of a chance. If there's something that I don't really know how to do, I'll find a way of doing it. Now there's different aspects, so I could be doing something else and I know like an actual master at it, so I'd be like, hey, I've got this job, which way should I approach it? You know, like I've done that recently and it's been great, especially Instagram, because I follow so many incredible craftsmen on there, and it's just like great to have that, you know, as backup if you need just help in anything, you can ask them.
So it'll be interesting. I want to see what you end up deciding. You know, do you go the route where, you know, you do try to run the business more? But the problem is, will you be happy doing that?
Right. Well, the carpentry field is pretty, you know, wide and varied. a lot of the stuff that I do isn't, you know, it's not so much your simpler stuff, you know, it's more, you know, it's a little bit more difficult than your regular run of stuff. So, like I said, it's like the communication thing. It's like, I know which way I want to do it, but can I tell this person to do it the way that I want to do it without having to do it? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you could explain to me for fucking 10 hours. I'm not going to be able to do it.
Like,
that's just not my skill set. You know what I mean? You could, like, here, here's how you do this. And I'll be like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I can't do that.
So my lead guy, Lucas, is fantastic. You know, he's great. He's from Brazil. He seems to pick up everything. Got a great mind, got a great eye for detail. But, you know, there's certain things that, you know, he might find difficulty with. Like, we done a foyer. I think I just posted about it this morning. It's kind of a weird approach. You know, how do we, because we had like four or five walls, just weren't too sure how to approach because we took the sheetrock off. We had, there were some areas that we just couldn't build out any further.
So was it a paneling job?
Paneling job.
So you pulled the sheetrock on, the panel was directly applied to the...
Yeah, so we put like a quarter inch plywood in behind it. You know, there was obviously not a lot of strength on that. But then we were kind of like, well, how do we build this? So it was a job for me. I couldn't really quite articulate it. So I sent my guys to another job while I went and thought about it. Then I decided to pre-assemble everything outside. We could fit everything in the door, pre-assembled in sections, which worked out beautifully. But it's like that. It's like that example, you know, I couldn't quite explain how I wanted it done without having to do it myself.
Did you bring them to show you what you, to show them what you did?
Just after I had started.
Well, that's good. I mean, they'll learn from that,
Of course. So it's stuff like that there. You know, we don't do, like I said, it's not super difficult, but sometimes we're doing stuff that's not your run of the mill.
Yeah,
you
know? It's challenging. Do you ever miss doing more than just finish?
You know, it'd be like the simplest little thing. You have to like frame up a wall. I'm like, you know what? I miss this. You can just get the deal going. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. And I think variety, like there's that saying, the variety is spice of life. It's like true. Like in, we were talking beforehand, like I feel like that's this podcast for me. Because if I had to just do my work 5 days a week, I'd be thoroughly bored. But mixing something completely different, it helps. It like put you in like a different mind space, like, and I think it makes you better at the other stuff because you've like disengaged from it,
of course,
and then when you go back you're like, okay, now I'm gonna sit down, let's go refresh after this.
So that for me actually is like built-ins and cabinets. So whenever I'm doing cabinets at the shop, that's a nice change. It might all seem like finished, but it's not to me. You know, it's different. I get a lot of satisfaction out of it, so that kind of, that kind of breaks it up a bit as well.
Why do you think it's, what's different about it?
I don't know. It's just something about building boxes, I guess.
Is it because it's more repetition than the other thing? Or is it that
I don't know. Well, you know, built-ins are all different shapes and sizes. But I don't know. I just get satisfaction a lot of the time. You know, I'd be in the shop by myself and I just, you know, listen to whatever I'm listening to and I go at it and I enjoy it. It's actually find it quite relaxing just being in the shop doing my own thing, not having to worry about anything else. But
will you do just run of the mill cabinets too, or are you only doing like
so a lot of iron stuff, mainly custom?
Yeah,
you know, custom stuff, custom sizes.
Yeah.
But that, as far as like, you know, where do I see myself, I kind of, like I said, I kind of feel like on a personal level, I kind of feel like the job site, you know, installers isn't in a great, you know, isn't in great shape. I feel like there's guys out there that maybe don't know or aren't doing the job that they should. So I kind of feel like, you know, I'm kind of strong in that field too, but built-ins is kind of like another thing that I enjoy doing. But I won't give up on the field stuff either because I know we're good at it. And I kind of feel like...
I know somebody that, you know, had a cabinet shop as a, like an add-on to their business. And they're exploring, you know, making that...
full-time.
Or becoming like a part of their business unto itself, which is they'll make the cabinets for other people. They'll just...
of course.
Produce cabinets. Not install them, not just... become almost like a, you know, a manufacturer, obviously you're not an assembly line. It's more custom.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that take out the...
the fun?
The fun or the variability of having to deal with like the headaches of the on-the-job stuff? Do you like...
There's headaches either way, isn't there, really? You know, there's timelines to meet. There's mm-hmm. details that might be a little trickier than other things.
You probably have to get a lot more into drawings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I kind of have it, like I say, I have it on my own mind. I mean, you give me like a simple drawing, some simple dimensions. I don't always need to throw it in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bit of plywood and a pencil. Have the rips written down, lengths I need. Not the fanciest of tools,
mm-hmm.
but I know I can do a nice job. So.
Interesting. I mean, we've been talking about this a bit, but one of the questions, because I think a lot of people struggle with, and not just specifically in the trades, but generally in life, like, how do you transfer, and it sounds like you don't really know the answer yet, and I don't know the answer either, but like, how did you swap, though, but maybe better way said, not that you've like figured out what being a business owner is, but how do you switch from being an employee and a tradesperson to a business owner?
Well,
you know, and do you get stuck? Do you kind of start acting like a...
I mean, there's really not an awful lot to it. You know, as far as my business goes, I mean, you know, I'm a subcontractor a lot of the mm-hmm. time. So, I mean, you know, I give somebody a price. It's usually not a big job. It's usually like a trim package mm-hmm. or it's usually a built-in. So like invoices, estimates, I'll do all that myself because, mm-hmm. you know, it's nothing crazy to handle. I've got a bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
She checks in every now and then. Not really that difficult. I mean, my worries is at the start were finding the work, mm-hmm. how to find the work before I done anything else. So yeah. As far as like a business owner, I mean, just trying to find work, keep busy.
But that hasn't been a problem.
Hasn't been a problem, no. And I don't think a lot of people find that in our trade. If you're like a carpenter, a general contractor, yeah, they've got more headaches, more mm-hmm. stuff to deal with. But me, it's been minimal, to be honest.
All right, gun to your head.
Well, maybe I should be doing a bit more, but I'm not.
Yeah, well, yeah, you were talking about it, like, you know, how much more do you, classic phrases, work on the business, not in the business?
Right, right? Yeah.
That sounds like that's the next step.
Thinking so. I guess there comes a time in everyone's life where you think, okay, maybe I need to do this a little, maybe I need to step away from this and do a bit more of this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something I'm going to look into. If I can stay off the tools a little bit more than what I am, that's something I'd want to do and manage better. That's kind of the direction I want to go.
Mm.
So,
did you have to like mentally change your mindset at all? That's because I think of like the mindset as an employee is different than a business owner, and it takes like some confidence.
Right. I guess you just grow, don't you? You know, it's like I was a carpenter / businessman. I've gotten more into like like networking. I met you through Instagram, said let's grab a coffee sometime.
Yeah.
I like to network. I like to meet interesting people.
Mm.
It's also good for business, you know. I guess it's just something you grow into, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's funny. If you start younger, it's almost... I think it could be easier.
Right.
Because the more you know, the more you realize the amount of stuff you don't know.
Right.
Because I even had people being like, I can't believe you did that at your age with a kid at home, this and that. And blah, blah, blah. And
see, I don't know, you know, because I was doing it from such an early age. And then you're just doing it for money out of high school. You're not really into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't anyways. So I kind of feel like, you know, There was guys even in the union that had like dropped out of college. They had tons of debt probably. And they're just in framing union to get money. But they're also a lot more mature. So they're also more driven.
Mm.
So it kind of felt like it took me to get to Boston to really mature into this and to really have that drive to succeed. Which I kind of feel like a lot of people do in America.
Yep.
You know, which makes this land great.
Yeah. And I guess that's there right there is like a mindset, maybe even coming here changed your mindset, right? Like, if I'm going to fly to the other side of the fucking world,
yeah,
I'm going to do something. I'm not going to go there to...
I'll be honest, like, you know, when I first got here and when I was staying here, when I decided to stay, I was like, you know, it can be a lonely place. You know, your family's gone, or on the other side, you know, in Ireland.
Yeah.
Your friends are also back there too. So, you know, I just knew that I wasn't going to fail. You know, I knew people that went away, parents had to go send them money, all this here stuff. That wasn't going to be me ever.
Yeah.
You know, so I was always driven, you know. So yeah. I definitely wasn't going to fail.
Yeah. See, yeah, that is mindset, right? Like you it might have just been naturally there, or you didn't consciously think about it. But like that mindset, whether it was, hey, I'm moving to a new place, I'm not going to move to a new place to.
So that wasn't even in, that wasn't, well, yeah, I suppose it was the first time he came to America. I mean, you know, I just instantly fell in love with the place, you know. Love movies.
Yeah.
So you're in America now and you see the school buses and all this here stuff and you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm really over here. The heat of the summer.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of that 2008, so yeah, I love this place. Mm-hmm. It's class. So I back and forth a few times and then I decided to stay, and it was kind of like the first few months. I did find it difficult, you know, I was a bit homesick.
Yeah.
But in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm not going to fail here. I have to keep going. You know, I was unhappy like for a few years, you know, not taken away from my old boss, but you know, it was a bit of a difficult time for me, but I'm glad I done those years. You know, it's kind of like kids in all these days are not happy doing something, they just quit immediately. You know, I kind of not so much suffered, but I wasn't the happiest.
Persevered.
Persevered.
Yeah.
But I'm delighted that I stuck with it, because I learned a lot from that guy, and I have a lot to thank him for at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hear that, don't give up. I'm not a motivational speaker, like, but I knew how to stick it out, and I did, and that's part of the reason why, you know, I have what I have today.
Yeah, and you need that in your own business, that's for sure, because there are times where it just absolutely sucks.
Of course,
you know, and you just got to push. But I wonder, even moving away from family and friends and where you were, like, your environment matters, right?
Yeah, of course.
And like, it's human nature, and this isn't just about you or it's anybody. If you're in the same place with the same people, you're going to be more inclined to be stuck in the same
mindset,
ways and same mindset.
Yeah.
You know, I knew there was a younger guy that, you know, I would call him a friend, but it was more like he was much younger, and Karen and I both, you know, loved him and, you know, wanted to help him out and everything. And then he ended up going to prison. He went a couple times, and then, but it was funny, once he came back, you saw him go start hanging out with the same people again and going on the same corner. And it was like, the ending's written.
Well, you know, it's kind right? of funny. And you bring up a good point, because people would often say, especially, you know, here when they go back down, oh, well, your man's still on the same chair, drinking the same beer, you know, people are still doing the same thing. You're 100% right, like, you know, but some people decide to get out of that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I love going back home. Some people are just more comfortable there.
Yep.
But I guess once I got a taste of America, I was like, yeah, this place really has got a grip on me, because I was at home for 6 months, 2009, and it's all I could think about was getting back here.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's probably all those things, right? Like, you think like, okay, I don't want to blow this opportunity. You had a good foundation as far as learning, you know, and you had good skills, and, you know, and then there was nobody there telling you you can't do that,
right?
Like, I just came from a family that would be more of like, you know, the mindset of like, oh, get a good job, or oh, if you can get a city job and be there for 30 years and get a pen, like, that's safe, and like, don't, like, everybody was, don't take chances,
well, you know, my father,
I'm not saying that's your family, but I'm just saying everybody has that thing where they come from,
right?
You know, and it's, if you're in it, it's tough, but once you are able to step away, I think it sometimes can be freeing. It could be in a good way or a bad way, but it, like, it allows you to, like, change course.
Right. You know, my dad wouldn't be one of those people to say, oh, you know, get a job, do this, that. He didn't really say anything. He just knew that I was going to work every day. And then, like I said, me and my friend went out on our own. My buddy Gavin, he's got his own construction company now, Blacklock Construction. Good friend, still best friends. But
is he here or back home?
He's here.
Okay.
It was kind of him that really got me out of my own. You know, us two going out, he was the one that got like the first big break. You know, me and him went into it as partners. You know, it didn't work out. He wanted to go a different direction. He's a GC now. I'm still, you know, doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever work for him?
Yeah, doing a job right now for him, actually. Nice. Okay. Yeah.
That's great.
But yeah, we played football and all together as well. So, but it was kind of like, I guess that was just worked out.
Yeah.
You know, we found that job and then I was able to stay busy from that to where I am now. Mm. You just got to keep your head down. Again, you know, like I said, I was lucky I got those nice few projects that I could showcase what I could do.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But being around other people, though, that are thinking these things
right.
really matters. There's so much truth to the, you know, you're the sum of the five closest people around you, right?
Right. And
I think that's what obviously makes this country great in a lot of senses is how the amount of people that were willing to, especially like a long time ago with the back in the Ellis Island days, that were willing to, or now in the days that people are coming from places where it's there's a lot of turmoil and they're like, okay, I'm gonna get on a boat or a plane or start walking
right
to a place that I don't know anybody and maybe don't speak the language or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to come here and I'm going to go make it happen.
Yeah. That's like, it. Like it's this drive to survive type of thing. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, we necessarily have that, but you know, you're right. Like you say, you're around people that are successful and you're like, you know what, if he's doing it, I can do it.
Yeah.
It's the land of opportunity. You know what I mean?
But the percentage of people.
Right.
That are here that, you know, our first generation, second, maybe two generations removed of people that were willing to take a chance.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's a lot of people. And, you know, I think of like, so on my mom's side, they, you know, there was a lot of people that didn't leave Italy and they stayed there. And you almost think like, hey, were the people that were like chance takers, they're the ones that got on the boat and they all came here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's like by being around that mentality and if you came here and there was other people you were friends with from back home that also had that mindset and you're around other people that like, oh shit, look where we are. We've got to, let's fucking go for it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It seems like, you know, like I said, it's the land of opportunity. You know, I was never truly happy working for somebody else. So I kind of always knew that I want to work for myself.
Yep.
You know, okay. So I guess that was all part of it too. You know, the money thing is another thing, but I guess just having that freedom of doing your own thing is invaluable. Now, don't get me wrong, comes with stresses. Like, I had my uncle was over there last week and I could barely take any time off work, you know, which, you know, I've got my own business. Why can't I take time off?
Yeah.
Well, because this guy's in on the phone, where are you, you know?
Yep.
It's not the way it should be. But I guess that gets a grip on some people and then they decide to go back and work for somebody and there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah.
But that's something, you know, I even contemplate at times, but will it ever happen?
Yeah, like there's no right answer, right? Like even when you were deliberating, you know, to put the tools on and go small and just be happy being a finished carpenter and do my own thing, maybe have one helper or whatever.
Right.
Chug along, or do I step back and run more of a business and focus on training and all this other stuff? One's not right, one's not wrong.
Right.
It's just, what do you want?
Yeah, that's it. You want to find happiness. If, kind of feels like nowadays everyone's talking about money, money, money. Everything's money. How do I get really wealthy all this year?
Yeah.
You know, now more so than ever, I'm hearing it. You know, obviously, you know, Instagram, you've got all these here, how to make $1 million and all this year. Pages popping up. So it's hard to know. You mean, you just got to be content if you're in the right space, you know. Some people are content, some people aren't. Some people are more driven to make that $1 million. Some people are more content with just having enough. And there's nothing wrong with either one.
Yeah.
As long as people aren't getting screwed on the way.
Yeah, like the money's almost like secondary. Like you have to be happy with where you are in the moment. Because if you think like, okay, once I get to X, then I'll be happy.
Right.
You're kidding yourself. If you're not happy now, you're not going to be happy with more money. Like,
right.
That's just not the way it works. Or you're not going to be happy when this many people work for you. Or like, that's, you have to figure out how can I be happy in the moment.
Right.
And that's a challenge. And I mean, I feel like you, like, yes, the money's wonderful.
Right.
But like having my own business is entirely about
You doing you?
Yeah, like, you know, for good or for bad, like yeah. I don't want to be forced to do anything I don't want to do.
Right.
And I'm kind of hard-headed yep. about that, and maybe to a fault, but that's where I am, and I'm happy that, like, right now I'm spending a day doing a podcast.
Right.
With you.
Yeah.
And there's nobody
yelling saying, at you. Where are you?
Yeah, about where are you, or like, is that really a good use of your time to spend a day on a podcast when we have this project being done? Like,
well, I put my phone
off. On, I want to, you know, like
I put my phone on do not disturb, but if I take it off that, God knows, I might have explode. A few missed calls.
yeah. Yeah. But that's what it is, right? Like, so it's not, this is, for me, this isn't about
money. Yeah.
You know?
You know, I don't wake up every day and, you know, think, oh, how much money can I make today? You know, stuff like that. That's just not me. I'm not. A lot of some people are. They're driven and they can't wait to get the work done, to get that check in the bank and, you know, show off this and show off that. I have no interest in that.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy what I do. I want to have the nice tools, stuff like that. That's really all that's in my mind.
Yeah. You want nice tools. I want nice food.
Right.
I want to be able to eat at nice restaurants. I don't care about the car I drive, the clothes I wear, the house I live in. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I want really nice food. So yeah. That's my motivator, but short of that, I don't need much. But this was excellent, Sean. I mean, I think we've kind of covered. I was curious where you... No, you know, I'll ask it. Gun to your head. Where do you think you'll be in 5 years?
I don't really know the answer to that one. You know, I was talking to my wife.
Put a gun to your head. So, put a gun to my head. You were talking to your wife.
Talking to my wife, and I was like, I think we need to start writing down some stuff here. See where we see ourselves, you know, in a few years' time, maybe set some goals. It's not really something, you know, you kind of get established enough for me, well, me anyways, that you're just content going as it's going.
Yeah.
But I feel like I need to start, like, really envisioning, because I'm not going to be the age that I am now. You know, I'll be older next year, you know, stuff like that. So I really got to think about where I want to be. You know, 5 years is a good target, you know, to figure out where I want to be in 5 years. But, you know, as you get older, things change. You might not be able to do what you once did, stuff like that. So it is good to stop and think about, you know, the future, which I'm guessing a lot of people don't do.
Yeah, you know, because you're caught in the current.
Yeah.
Right, you're just in the current and you're just fucking getting sucked along, you know, and then you, 5 years later, and you get spit out the other end, you're like, what happened?
What happened? Yeah. And sadly, I feel like a lot of people go through that during life, and then, you know, they're in their latter stages of life and they've got nothing, you know, no investments, no money in the bank. It's sad to see, but you just got to be smarter about it. You just got to stop and think, which I don't think people do, like we said.
Yeah. And I think more frightening than the investments and that kind of stuff is like they're in a job that they hate.
Yeah. And they got to continue working on it.
Yeah. And they're like, for multiple reasons, either like, they've got a mortgage payment that's big.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I can't leave, so I have to stay in this miserable job. Yep. Or they're like, I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't know anything else.
Right.
I can't change.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I get that this is easier said than done, but there's so much you can do. Right. And the amount of people that say like, oh, I can't do that because I have a mortgage pay. Like, you know what? Sell your big house and move into an 850 square foot ranch.
Right.
Or rent or do whatever. And then what you do what you want to do. Oh, I can't do that. Okay. Well, don't say you can't do this. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. No, right? That's a good way of explaining it. Yeah.
Right. You don't want to do that, but you can. And I would argue living in a smaller house and doing what you want, you will be a lot happier than living in a big house
big
doing
time.
What you don't want.
Like, big time.
It's that simple. But the amount of people, oh, I can't, you know, have to pay for, you know, this, or I have to pay for that. And it's like, you're a fucking slave. You're slaving to the box that you live to, right? Like,
yeah. You know, it is that there. Like, you know, like I said, I like nice stuff for work. You know, house is nothing too fancy at all. Yeah. I bought myself a truck last year because why not? It's a tax write-off. You know, but the truck gets
and you
old.
Regret it.
Kind of regret it, you know, because I know in a few years' time there'll be a newer one, which I'm not into that, so I won't be selling that one to get the latest one. Yeah. But it's like we forget, you know, people want the latest and greatest, but there's always going to be something else down the line. So that's the way I think, you know, like even.
Except for tools.
Like my wife, we went to T-Mobile like a couple of months ago and they were like, oh, do you want to upgrade? I'm like, no. Why do I want to upgrade? You know, Apple, all they come out with a new phone, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need that 16 or whatever it is now. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's silly.
Yeah.
So I'm like yourself. But low key, you know, you want your nice food and stuff like that I'd be more content with that than having, you know, all the fancy things in life.
Yeah, and doing what you want.
Well, until I get really, really rich.
Yeah. I'm like, Sean, will you come with, who's this? Joe who?
Oh, you.
Awesome. Sean, this was excellent. I for one, am looking forward to see what happens to Kelco in the future. Even if you did chart the same course you're doing right now, you're doing some impressive work and you've done some impressive things since you've gotten here. So I appreciate you spending the time.
And, we'll talk soon. Another great conversation of many. So it was nice to be here.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Sean.